I know, a little bit geeky sometimes. Can't help but that side of me come out. But I love Montana, and I love our history. I'm not a history buff. I can't remember dates and things and people and places all that well. I have to look it up, and I enjoy looking it up. There's this book that's called The Montana Dateline that I've had here. And lately, I go back to mid-January 1864, and what do you find? A group of lawless men patrolling the mountains and mining camps of western Montana, hanging the bad guys and possibly some of the good guys. So today we go back in time and look at the legendary figures called the Vigilantes on Voices.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, running for president in 2036, it's Tom Schultz.
Ah, thank you for that, Josh. Are you going to be on my ticket?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. But, you know, I'll be there to support you either way. I'll announce thanks. You coming down the red carpet.
That's a beautiful thing, Josh, yeah, and that ain't going to happen. Not running for president. I'm not built for that job, and I hope I'm smart enough for this job. Hey, welcome. Thank you for being here. It is 22 years. Man, that's two decades strong, working on three. Trying to provide that objective perspective. Over time, and appreciate you being a part of it here, too. We will talk a little bit about Joe Biden's inauguration as the 46th president of the United States today, an historic moment. Of course, history is made in the moment, but I think it's analyzed over the years, and perspective comes, and we'll have some thoughts on that a bit later on. We'll kind of go live to Washington, D.C., and catch some of the coverage here as best we can at particular times. But today, as I said, I've been kind of geeking over the Vigilantes because I don't know. I don't know if they're good guys or bad guys or in between, but it was certainly a time in Montana's history that was tumultuous, that, you know, there was lawlessness in a lot of places. And this is mid-January 1864, and I think over the last week or so, as I've been trying to line this up, I've read some of these excerpts from the book I referred to earlier, Montana Dateline. Here's one for, I'm just looking kind of through it. This is going to be January 24th. George Shears, a member of Henry Plummer's gang of road agents, is arrested by vigilantes at a ranch near present-day Frenchtown. When captured, Shears readily admits to stealing horses. Vigilantes take Shears to a nearby barn, where a rope is thrown over a crossbeam. I see that in almost every one of these little excerpts over the past several weeks when the vigilantes were really out and about. There's a rope thrown over a crossbeam. They went to just about any place and every place they could hang a man, and that's what they did. And this is interesting, is when the rope is placed around his neck, George Shears, he assists the vigilantes by jumping off a ladder, and he climbed on his own. So he... I don't know. Maybe he figured out, well, I guess this is it. Rich Arstead is with us, archives manager, Montana Historical Society. That's just one of the snippets, Rich, that I find just interesting. And if I ask you the question and we get started here, thanks for being here. The vigilantes, good, bad, or in between? How would you answer that?
Definitely in between. They had their good days. They had their bad days, and just like everybody else. And so I think it'd be hard to label them as anything other than that. We are human after all. We have feet of clay, and you know, you just might wake up with a grouch on some morning and things just don't go well.
The thing about the vigilantes is, well, one thing is that we've become kind of well known for that movement in Montana. I don't care where you want to go. We'll probably pop around a little bit, but as you and I talked yesterday, it sort of started really with the Civil War. How's that?
Well, you have to remember that, you know, when the gold rush happened in Montana, the United States is deep into the Civil War. 1862, 63, they start finding gold in Montana and people start moving to the territory and so forth. And you also see a lot of people moving in from the border states, Missouri especially, because the border war has been going on there since the 1850s between the abolitionists and the pro-slavery folks. And so you've got a lot of people coming west from the border states just to get out of the way of the war. It doesn't mean that their sympathies don't lie with the North or the South. It just means that they're not invested enough to put a uniform on. The other thing to consider is that you've got a lot of people coming east from east and south from the playing out gold mines or gold fields in California and Nevada and so forth. Everybody's looking for that El Dorado, and so it's the next big strike. And so you've got people coming from the east and from the west coast and from the east coast, and meeting in the middle. And some of those folks, you know, like Granville Stewart, I always like to use him as an example. Him and his brother went west early on in the 1850s, went to California, spent some time there prospecting and so forth, and ended up in Montana. It's not like they really had a dog in the fight with the Civil War. It was something that was going on. It was something that was somewhat interesting, but not enough to pull them back east to participate. But they still had their own political party affiliations and so forth. And so you see a little bit of that clash going on, too, along with the vigilantes. You also have a lot of paroled Confederate soldiers who come west. Mm. These were individuals that were captured in battle, and because it's expensive and it takes a lot of manpower to hold prisoners of war, they would parole them. Basically, they'd sign off on an oath that they wouldn't fight for the next year or 2 years, and so you could either go back home and wait it out, or you could head west and see if you could strike it rich. And if you struck it rich, why would you go back?
And what was justice like? And this was like 20 years before Montana achieved statehood. They had some sort of political formation and organization, but justice was subjective at best, huh?
Oh, definitely subjective at best. I mean, when the gold strikes started in Montana, you know, you have to think about the fact that at first Montana was part of Dakota Territory. So the territorial capital and justice, if you will, was all the way over in Yankton, in the Dakotas. Later on, when Idaho Territory was created, it was on the other side of the Bitterroots, which was difficult to get across, especially in the winter months. Montana's first territorial governor, Sidney Edgerton, was actually on his way to Idaho with an appointment as Chief Justice of the Territorial Supreme Court for Idaho Territory, and got stuck in Bannock on the east side of the Bitterroot Mountains. And so he's wandering around Bannock, kind of watching this whole vigilante action unfold, and he's got a Supreme Court appointment tucked in his vest pocket, and yet he's not weighing in on what the vigilantes are doing or what's going on or anything like that. And so that makes it kind of interesting. Justice is where you could find it and how you could find it. It's also kind of a tradition of vigilante justice. You'd seen it in California. You'd seen a little bit of it in Nevada Territory and so forth with these gold strikes, because they would attract anybody and everybody. So the good, the bad, the indifferent, and the evil. So, you know, if things were going to get taken care of, you typically had to take care of them yourself. And sometimes you had these explosions of vigilante justice where people would decide that they'd had enough and weigh in a rather, oh, how do I want to say it?
I know.
I don't want to say robust, but in a way it is robust, because, I mean, you consider the fact that the Montana vigilantes hung 21 people in 6 weeks. I mean, that's a pretty impressive record.
So, and that's one of the questions I was going to ask you. Montana wasn't, maybe it's the best known for the vigilante movement, but it wasn't necessarily the only vigilante movement. You said it lasted about 6 weeks. Would you say that was the longest or the most notorious, the worst? How would you describe that movement compared to maybe some of those other states that you referenced?
I would say probably the most bloodletting in such a short amount of time. The other part of this is there's a couple of hangings in there that they didn't count, like the hanging of George Ives. That's not counted on the vigilante roster, even though he was hung by the vigilantes. But that was kind of like pulling the plug, if you know what I mean. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, hey, we can do this. And it was after that that they really began to get warmed up about taking care of the issue that they had. The other thing is, too, you know, there's one newspaper at the time in the territory, and so you're just getting one point of view on what's going on when you're reading the paper. So it's a little difficult to pin down whether or not they were needed as much as it was touted. You know, and then you take into consideration the fact that Thomas Dimmesdale, who was a school teacher and a variety of other things in the Bannock and Virginia City area, and as well as the editor of the newspaper, he's the one that wrote the definitive book on the Montana vigilantes. And the vigilante action that we're talking about here, you know, basically early 1864, and Dimmesdale's book comes out in 1866. And so he's a firsthand account of the events, and so he's considered his book is considered the authority on it, and he basically outlines why the vigilantes were necessary. And one of the things that he cites was over 100 murders and robberies in the area before the vigilantes unleashed their justice at the end of a rope.
Rich Arstead is with us. He's the archives manager of the Montana Historical Society. I had to sort of laugh here at your bio. It says, born on a mountaintop in Wyoming. I think there's probably some vigilante in you if that's like, I guess I'm just joking here, but I think many a vigilante was born on a mountaintop somewhere. Hey, if you guys want to join us here, 866-627-5483 to call in. Again, we're talking about history. We'll have some perspective as history is happening in Washington, D.C. Today with the Biden administration being inaugurated. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. I got a quick text message here, too, at 781-627-5483. About the vigilantes here, did the vigilantes take any type of oath? What kind of organization was this?
Pretty well organized. And, you know, that's one of the great things about working at the Montana Historical Society and working in the archives. I mean, you can go online and see the vigilante oath on the Montana Memory Project. But actually holding the original in your hand and looking at it, I mean, it's pretty fragile, but you can see the signatures plain on those individuals that signed the vigilante oath. You can actually read the vigilante oath. There's actually a record book of expenses that was kept by the treasurer of the vigilantes. I mean, they elected officers. I mean, this was a serious business. This wasn't, you know, a bunch of the boys sitting around a table in the saloon who all of a sudden decided to do these. These were considered the upstanding individuals of the territory, and so when they organized, they really organized. And so the Historical Society was fortunate enough back in the day to get the records from the Secretary of the Vigilantes donated to the Historical Society. That's the other thing that's kind of cool about this. The vigilantes came about in early 1864. The Montana Historical Society is created in 1865.
You guys have been around a long time. And I kind of want to come back and talk a little bit about the Montana Historical Society as we continue our exploration. Mid-January 1864, vigilante justice, all about Montana. Talk a little bit about the vigilantes today here on Voices of Montana. I've been looking to do this, and it just came together for today with Rich Arstead, Archives Manager of the Montana Historical Society. There are names here that, of course, Henry Plummer is probably, Sheriff Plummer is probably one of the most notorious among those who were hung by the vigilantes. Or was he shot? Or was he beat first? They didn't like Sheriff Plummer, did they, Rich?
You know, it's kind of interesting. They elected him sheriff, and so at first he came through with a pretty sterling reputation. It was only later on, over time, that they actually became suspicious of him. And, you know, I'll say this. For the number of hangings that they carried out in that six-week period, only one of them was borderline. I mean, it was pretty bad. Most of them, they had a quick trial, and they did have a trial, even though the verdict was pretty much a given. And then they were hung. You talked about the guy that jumped off of the ladder to hang himself. He's not the only one that took the final jump themselves. Boone Helm did the same thing when they hung five of them in Virginia City. it was the way they did things. They were kind of macho back in the day.
Who were these vigilantes, and am I related to any of them? I feel like I am.
You could very well be. You know, that's the nice thing about the Historical Society. You can do your research on your family genealogy, and a lot of people do, and find out exactly if you are related to them. You mentioned earlier about me being born on a mountaintop in Wyoming and having some vigilante blood in me.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
My blood comes from the other side of the jail cell. I never seen my dad so tickled in his entire life when I sent him the 1897 prison photo of his grandfather, my great-grandfather, who was in Montana State Prison for stealing horses. I mean, it was pretty impressive. The only photograph he'd ever seen of the old man with his nose not broken. So, that's, you know, funny. We all come from various sides of the debate, vigilante or outlaw. And that's one of the interesting things about genealogy. You just never know where it's going to land, and you got to be prepared for it to land on the opposite side of law and order, if that's the case, and be able to accept it. It's kind of interesting to see how some people react to that. So you should come on up, and we'll dig into it and see if you have any vigilante or outlaw roots in you.
I'll pass on that, because we'll probably find something else, and then I'll be running from that for the rest of my life. Grew up in Libby, Montana, attending the Lincoln County campus at Flathead Valley Community College, and then U of M for a bachelor's and master's. It's Rich Arston. So the vigilantes, are some of those names still around?
I imagine some of the names are still around. Most of them that stayed became members of the Pioneer Society. You have to remember, populations at this time were pretty fluid. So a lot of people who came into the territory early on during the gold strikes and so forth only lasted as long as the major strikes were going on. And then as soon as the heavy mining moved in, they moved on. So you get a lot of transition. But some of the names, you know, you certainly recognize. Wilbur Fisk Sanders was the prosecutor for the vigilantes, and so he was a member. There are some that argue that his role in the vigilantes actually hurt his political career. He tried and tried to get elected to office in Montana when it was a territory, and later on when it became a state. He did serve briefly as one of Montana's first U.S. senators, but he drew the short straw, and in the next legislative session, this is when the legislators chose the senators, he ended up losing out. But so Wilbur Fisk Sanders, probably another one that people recognize the name is James Williams. They called him Captain Williams. He came in 1862, and he was the leader of the vigilante group that rode around and rounded up the outlaws and hung them. He's a cattle rancher in the area, well respected. We have some of his letters and so forth in the collection, as well as some of his sons. So you can actually read their actual writings and so forth of what's going on at the time that they were living and so forth, and that's pretty special when you can do that. Others on the periphery were Thomas Hauser, Samuel Hauser, who became a territorial governor for a brief period of time and was one of the big money men in Montana. Francis Thompson is one of those people that I mentioned that was here during the early part of the gold rush and then actually went back east and made his life back there. But he had a huge impact on the territory. He served in the first territorial legislature. He's the one that is responsible for how our state seal looks today. We actually have the sketch at the Historical Society that he drew of the territorial seal in that first legislative session in 1864-65. And other than, you know, getting cleaned up and looking a lot snazzier, he pretty much depicts what the state seal is today. So that's a pretty good impact for somebody that was here for a short period of time. He was also good buds with Henry Plummer, which, you know, I think people have a tendency to forget that these mining communities were small and tight-knit. Everybody knew everybody. And so Thompson met Henry Plummer early on, and as a matter of fact, stood up at his wedding when he married Electa Bryan at Sun River Crossing and served as the bridesmaid. And he writes in his book, A Tenderfoot in Montana, that he did it quite well.
Rich, hang on. I want to ask a couple of questions. And one is that we seem to celebrate the vigilantes. Is that right or wrong? I know from a historical perspective, you're just looking at it from that historical perspective, but we do seem to celebrate them, right or wrong. And then when they finally got that rascal plumber, I wonder what kind of celebration that might have kicked off. Back with more here in just a bit. Rich Arstead, Archives Manager of the Montana Historical Society, today here on Voices of Montana. Here's Brian Bennett with headlines.
Earlier this month, Governor Greg Gianforte changed the population in Phase 1B, which had previously included essential workers. Most of Montana's counties have told the state they are ready to move to that phase of vaccination today. Tuesday, Senator John Tester met with Pete Buttigieg, President-elect Joe Biden's nominee, to head the U.S. Department of Transportation. They discussed the importance of rural transportation systems, the critical need for infrastructure investments, and the importance of keeping low-income states like Montana connected to the national transportation network. Montana's entire congressional delegation will attend Joe Biden's inauguration at 10 o'clock Montana time this morning when he's sworn in as the 46th President of the United States. In Helena today, the Capitol is on alert for possible armed protest. A collaborative plan between the Capitol security as well as state and local law enforcement has been put in place. With Montana News headlines, I'm Brian Bennett.
We have a historian on today. It's Rich Arstead, Archives Manager with the Montana Historical Society. It began there two decades ago. He's working on three, as we are here on Voices of Montana. Could also have a weatherman on today, because on this date in 1954, the temperature reached minus 70 degrees below at a weather station just west of Rogers Pass, northwest of Helena. And to date, that is known as the coldest day on record in the 48 states. You remember that, don't you, Rich?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. What'd you say, 1950?
54, yeah, I'm just kidding.
54? Yeah, that's just a decade before I was born.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and 70 degrees below is nothing. Come on. Is it wrong to celebrate the vigilantes?
You know, I don't know if it's wrong. I mean, we weren't back in that time, so it's a little hard for us to assign right or wrong to their actions. We do celebrate them in a number of ways. You know, here in Helena, there's the vigilante stadium for the high school. There's the Vigilante Day Parade that's been going on for decades. The East Helena High School just adopted the vigilante as their mascot. The 3777, which is associated with the vigilantes, is on the uniform patch of the Montana Highway Patrol. It's also on the emblem on the car as well. So, yeah, we do celebrate them, but we celebrate them as a law and order type of organization as opposed to a terrorist group. And I guess it depends on where you were at and on what end of the rope you were on, how you actually viewed them. I was always amazed at how compliant, most of the individuals were that they ran down and hung. I mean, you know, obviously there was some heartfelt discussions and so forth about the things that they had done and the confessions that they had made and so forth. But it seems pretty compliant. And, you know, as far as whether or not they hung the right individuals, you know, it's gonna take some more digging, and I don't know if we'll ever get an answer to that. And I don't know if we ever should. I mean, part of the fun of history is going back and arguing it from various viewpoints. But we have to be careful about assigning our own modern day attitudes and so forth to it.
Well, as you put it, they got to 21 people in 6 weeks' time. I bet if you sort through them, you know, there's probably a varied list there. I do want to come back because you mentioned something that my friend Nick next door from one of our affiliates, KGHL in Billings, had said about the Montana Highway Patrol patch and that number on there, 377. I want to kind of dig into the significance of that, because that is something that we see today. And as you mentioned, too, in a lot of places, we see our history, I don't know if it's really celebrated, but it's honored in a certain way. So back with more here in just a bit. Rich Arstead is with us, archives manager with the Montana Historical Society. We'll continue our discussion on the vigilantes. From Montana, for Montana, it's Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Thanks again for being here. We're going to go live for a moment here to the inauguration of Joe Biden. And stand by, we are talking with Rich Arstead, archives manager with the Montana Historical Society. But here is the national anthem today for the inauguration of our 46th president. It's actually sung by Lady Gaga.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. For the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare,
presentation from our nation's capital today for the inauguration of President Joe Biden. That was Lady Gaga. Man, she can sing. Jennifer Lopez, Garth Brooks are going to perform a bit later on. I just wanted to take you there to Washington, D.C. Really is an historic moment, and it's kind of hard to put perspective, I think, on history as we live in the moment. Some people have that clarity, and they're able to do it. I don't know that I'm one of them. I got to mull things over, but we certainly do live in the moment. We're talking about history today. I guess we might have time to talk about it a bit later on. We got open phones tomorrow here. Tom Schultz, Voices of Montana. Rich Arstead. Rich, thank you for being here, and thanks for that. You know, I just want to say, I remember after 9/11, I did a lot of sports broadcasting, and for that entire year, because of, I think, what our country had been going through, you know, a lot of times as sportscasters, and this is not neither here nor there, but I broadcast the national anthem on the air. A lot of times we would just try to, as far as our broadcast goes, not carry the anthem. But for that year, it really meant something. And I think it's going to mean something to us here, too. So thank you for going through that. Give me a little bit here, Rich, on your thoughts on history in perspective. We live in it in the moment, but we really don't get, as a historian, you know, when do we begin to get real perspective and maybe even real truth about history?
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah.
You know, yeah, there are two type of historians. There are those that follow that line that you just laid out, and then there are those of us that are storytellers. I've always kind of fallen into the group of storytellers. I'm hesitant to ever say that this is the real truth of any situation, because that would require actually crawling into the gray matter of those that actually lived it and wrote about it at the time, and then I'm not sure that you could get it 100%. So, you know, essentially, you just put it in the perspective of the times. You were talking about 9/11 and the impact that it had and how you played the national anthem more and more. I would say, again, that you got to put the vigilante era in perspective in the time of the Civil War and 63, 64, 65, the war's winding down and so forth. And even though these folks are all the way over in Montana territory, communication is slow and so forth, they're still very much invested in the outcome of that. And so that's a topic of conversation. It's also a topic of discontent between the opposing sides. You had pro-Southerners, you had pro-Unionists, you had Democrats, you had Republicans. You know, that's one of the things that I always find somewhat amusing is, you know, they talk about how rancorous things are now and perhaps they didn't reach that level back in the day and so forth. And no, they reached that level. We fought a shooting war because it reached that level. And so, you know, I guess if that's perspective, that's perspective. One of the things that makes me think about that in this time period, that first territorial legislature actually passed a resolution with only one opposing vote from the House and the Senate at the time, saying that Montana's territorial residents would support the Union. The interesting thing about that, there's a quote in the middle of that resolution, and it rang a bell with me, and so, you know, I did what all good historians do. I threw it up on Google and searched, and lo and behold, it's a paraphrase of a comment that George Washington, our first president, made in his farewell address about allowing the divisiveness of political parties to separate us one from another. And so, you know, it's perspective is where you find it and where your belief systems come down and so forth. I don't think we're ever going to agree totally on the righteousness of the vigilantes or whether or not they were evil or not. I mean, there are books and so forth that you can read from other individuals about that. There's a good one by Ruth Mather called Hanging the Sheriff. Where she takes the stance that Henry Plummer wasn't as bad as he was made out to be, and maybe the vigilante movement was more of political partisanship, where the Democrats or the Republicans were doing their best to clear out the Republicans before territorial status and so forth. But, you know, there's arguments on both sides. So you got to find your own truth.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking about this too earlier. As we kind of today we talk about history, there might be a lesson to learn in today's look back at the vigilantes. It just wasn't planned this way, but they were lawless times, 1864 Montana, and it was hard to tell the good guys from the bad guys. And that seems to sound a bit familiar today, but here we are today. Our state's pretty strong, and we're fortunate still. And even 100 years from today, let's have hope that we are fortunate still.
Well, exactly. I mean, and even back then, the vigilantes and the outlaws that they hung, I mean, they had friendly relationships. I mean, Henry Plummer had, I believe it was Christmas dinner with the Edgertons, and Francis Thompson was one of his good friends. And when Thompson heard that the vigilantes were going to come for Henry Plummer the night before, Thompson, a friend of Plummer's, still a friend, spent the night in the cabin with him, but didn't tip him off that he was in trouble. I mean, it's interesting. The territory was small enough that you really couldn't avoid one another, nor would you, because you came together in these mining camps. And so there were friendly relationships. And maybe that's what comes through with the various hangings and so forth. And there are instances where, you know, they hung somebody that didn't fall into the group of the band of outlaws that they had talked about. One of them that was just outside that is a guy by the name of Jack Slade. His first name is actually Joseph, but they called him Jack. And they hung him in March of 1864 in Virginia City. And Slade's only crime was that he was tough, and when he was drinking, he was mean. And he drank a lot because that was recreation back in the day. You know, the vigilantes, he went on a tear, got drunk, scared the heck out of a bunch of people, and the vigilantes got together and decided that they needed to get rid of him before something bad happened. And so they strung him up. in Virginia City. They even refused to give him a chance to speak to his wife at the very end because they were afraid that if she showed up, she would appeal to the crowd, and that would end the opportunity to hang him.
Yeah, that's a story. One of our listeners, I think it's Carol Lee. Is that how you say that, Carol Lee? Sent me just the other day, or yesterday, as a matter of fact, regarding Slade. Hey, what ended the vigilante movement, Rich?
You know, that's the, kind of the interesting thing, because if you look at Rick Allen's book, A Decent Orderly Lynching, which you got to love the title.
Yeah.
He lists the original 21, or what he considers the original 21, that the 1864 vigilantes hung. But vigilantism in Montana that he lists out goes to 57 individuals, with the last one taking place in 1870 in Helena. But you also had a vigilante movement in the mid-1880s in central Montana that was led by Granville Stewart, as they were going around trying to clear out a bunch of rustlers that were working in the area that were stealing livestock and taking them north into Canada to sell and so forth, back and forth across the border. And so there was a vigilante movement in the 1880s. The vigilante moment that stands out in the 20th century is the hanging of IWW union organizer Frank Little in Butte in August of 1917. So
those names are still familiar. Before I run out of time, I want to get what's the significance of the number 377?
You know, that's an interesting debate, too. That's one of those things where you can fall down on either side. I had a Montana history teacher say that it was the dimensions of a grave, and I've heard people argue that, 3 feet wide, 7 feet long, 77 inches deep, or vice versa. Ah. I've also heard that it was a number attributed to the Masons, because there is some discussion about the fact that the majority of, if not all of the vigilantes, were members of the Masons. So, great article by Ellen Baumler in our Montana, the Magazine of Western History, about 3777, and a great article by Rick Allen in our magazine as well about 3777. And so I encourage folks to read those and flip a coin. I mean, that's kind of
right.
That's kind of what it is.
Make up your own mind.
Right. I like the idea of it being the dimensions of the grave. That sounds suitably scary. The other thing is Allen suggests that the 3777 can't be attributed to the 1864 vigilantes. It didn't come along until the 1870s or so before the 3777 actually appeared and associated with the vigilantes. So, like I said, you read the articles and you take a look at the best evidence and you make up your mind. That's the great thing about history.
Yeah, and
you have to do your own investigation.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't always give us clarity either. Hey, Rich, thank you so much for being on. You know, kind of like Montana, kind of like our history a little bit. We'll share some more as we go on down the road. Folks can still visit the Montana Historical Society.
We are open, and, you know, people can submit research requests online. We're happy to answer those. There's nothing more fun than digging into the past, especially for an archivist.
Yep, thanks. Just do a web search and you'll get there. Rich, be well, okay? Thanks for being on today.